This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A recent study of racial differences in academic performance at Duke is receiving a lot of attention, and the report isn't even published yet. The paper is called What Happens After Enrollment, an analysis of the time path of racial differences in GPA and major choice. Among its findings, it concludes that African-American undergraduates are more likely to switch from majors in the hard sciences and engineering to programs in the humanities and social sciences, majors that the study suggests are less academically challenging. We've asked the study's lead author to join us on the program today to talk about the research. Peter Arcidiacono is a professor of economics at Duke, and he joins us now from his campus office. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you on the program. What made you want to explore the academic performance among Duke's minority student population?
Well, I've had a long-standing interest in how people choose their college major and in the different sorting patterns that we see in terms of the types of people who end up in particular majors and how earnings differ across those majors. And I've also was influenced a lot by reading the evidence in the recent Supreme Court cases involving the University of Michigan. And what I found is that affirmative action seems to be one of these topics that people are really afraid to touch, and I'm sort of seeing why now. The evidence presented both in favor and against affirmative action, I think, in those Supreme Court cases, I found to be very weak, and so I wanted to have a better understanding of how these types of programs work.
Whether or not affirmative action is actually effective in outcomes, in other words, does it help students who were aided by affirmative action to get good jobs in the marketplace, that sort of thing?
That's right. And also thinking about how best to implement affirmative action. The fact is affirmative action is implemented very differently for Hispanics than say, for African Americans. So it's not just an issue about whether affirmative action should be in place, but how much should it be in place.
Now, you say in the abstract of the report says that, I don't quote, if affirmative action results in minority students at elite schools having much potential but weak preparation, then we may expect a majority of students, minority students, I should say, to start off behind their majority counterparts and then catch up over time.
That's right.
So that's what, and is that what you're looking at, is kind of how things, and there's data on this, and the data suggests that, in fact, minority students do catch up by the time they're seniors, at least in terms of GPA.
That's right. They do catch up in terms of GPA. As soon as you move to class rank, then their position remains relatively the same.
So how would you characterize your findings? What did you find?
Well, there's a sense in which I would say a lot of my paper has nothing to do with race, which is ironic given the title and such. But what we're basically finding is that differences in academic background matter quite a bit. And the way this manifests itself is that we start off with African Americans being, if anything, much more interested in the natural sciences and engineering and economics, but much less likely to get degrees at Duke than their white counterparts. But the stunning finding of the paper is that cross-racial differences can be fully explained by differences in academic preparation. So there is no racial gap in terms of switching behavior. And that, I mean, that's probably one of the most disturbing things to me about how the study's been characterized, as saying things like that blacks are taking the easy way out, or any inferences along those lines, because that's simply not true. What it looks to me in the data is that people with similar levels of preparation behave in similar ways.
So for major switching, we're going to have to get to the underlying assumption between which programs are more challenging and not. But before we get to that, the switching that occurs, if you go from the natural sciences, say, to the humanities, is based, you say, on preparation, how well you were prepared for college, not on race.
Exactly. And you can measure this in a number of different ways. Test scores are probably the most controversial, but that's a part of it. But one of the things that really attracted me to this data, and says a lot about Duke that they were willing to do this, is we actually have Duke's private rankings of the applicants. And we also know how well they perform in their first year courses. You can actually ignore differences in test scores and just look at conditioning on first year performance, and that will alone wipe out any racial differences in major switching.
Now, how about this assumption that the less difficult majors, say the humanities, are the things that that students switch to, and the more difficult are the natural sciences and engineering? How do you make that evaluation?
Well, it comes from it's certainly more than just the differences in grading standards, though that there's been a lot of work on that. There's a whole book written by Valen Johnson about differences in grading standards at Duke. But where this is really coming from is answers to survey questions from the students themselves. So what we see in terms of how much reported study time is happening, that adding an additional math course versus a humanities or social science course, it's going to be 50% more study time there. It's also the case that when we look at what course do students say is their most difficult course, that they're much more likely to say that their most difficult course is in the natural sciences or engineering and such than they are for humanities and social sciences. Now, everything that I'm saying there is an on-average statement. Certainly, and I would include myself in this, the humanities classes would be more difficult, and I actually deliberately avoided writing classes because I found it easier to do these other things, to do more math. But on average, people are reporting that it's more difficult. And we also have in the data why people switched their major. You know, was it because of course difficulty? And what we see is that African-American students are more likely to report that they're switching because of course difficulty, and that people who start out in the natural sciences and engineering are also more likely to report that they switched out because of course difficulty. But once again, just like with the major switching patterns, this is not about race. Once we condition on academic background, African-Americans are no more likely than whites to switch because of course difficulty.
And so the disparity in your numbers, the fact that a larger percentage of African-American students switch out of natural sciences into the humanities, we'll make that our code now, go from the natural sciences to the humanities, is because they are in general perhaps less prepared, and that could owe to inequalities in education all the way through the system. But what you're saying is there is a disparity in the numbers. There is a disparity in the percentages of those changing from one to another based on race. But when you look at preparedness as the reason, it turns out that an equal number of less well-prepared whites and African Americans are making the switch.
That's exactly right. And I think it's also important to understand why they're less prepared. And it's a combination of two things. One is, you know, we have the whole legacy of discrimination. African-American families have much less wealth than white families, and this affects what schools they're going to and the way schools are set up in terms of how students are tracked and such. I mean, for those individuals who take the SAT, whites are twice as likely to have had calculus in high school than African-Americans. So we have that on the one hand, and in response to that, we have affirmative action programs, which are designed to increase representation of particular groups. And what those programs do is mean that we are going to have different levels of academic background coming in. Absent affirmative action, we would not see these large disparities at Duke. That would come at a cost of less representation, though.
When you say that those less well prepared are as likely to make the switch, how do you measure that preparedness? How do you know how well prepared each of these students is?
Well, this comes through a combination of things. We use a number of measures. We have things, for example, like their test scores. We have Duke's private rankings of the applicants. We know parental education, parental income. whether they went to a private school or not. And we also have how well they do in their first year courses. So and that really is the key. All those other things do a good job of predicting how well they're going to do in the first year courses. But once we have the information about their performance in their first year courses, that other information is not that important. So to us, the measure of preparation is, you know, how are they actually going to perform in the classroom?
You did say that there is some improvement, although not as dramatic, in class ranking, about more than 5%. Doesn't that suggest that there is some convergence? Things do change. It is better.
That class ranking, that's the class ranking not adjusting for the sorting into majors. And once you sort into majors, then the numbers are a lot smaller.
On the State of Things this hour, my guest, Peter Assidionico. He is a professor of economics at Duke University, lead author of a controversial report, What Happens After Enrollment, an analysis of the time path of racial differences and GPA in GPA and major choice. Just ahead, we'll have reaction to the report and the experience of African-American students, or at least one, at Duke. We'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today talking about a controversial and yet still unpublished report out of Duke University. Study examines racial differences in academic performance among students at Duke. Found African-American undergrads are more likely to switch from majors in the natural sciences and engineering to programs in the humanities and social sciences. Its author is Peter Assidionico, and he is my guest this hour. And joining us now is William Sandy Darity. He's the chair of the African-American Studies Department at Duke. He's an arts and science professor of public policy and professor of African and African-American Studies and Economics. Sandy Darity, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us in the studio is Nana Asante. She is a senior at Duke and serves as president of the university's Black Student Alliance. Nana, welcome.
Thank you.
Sandy Darity, let me start with you. You've written an opinion piece for the Chronicle of Higher Education that responds to Peter's findings. What are your criticisms of the research?
I guess two central points. First, the study has a significant political impact because of its potential use as part of the brief that's being developed by the anti-affirmative action side on the Fisher versus Texas case. And second, I think the study is flawed in large part by the failure of the authors to be aware of work that's been done in other disciplines, particularly social psychology, on the phenomenon of stereotype threat, which provides a much better explanation for the outcomes that we're observing than the assumption that Black students entering Duke are significantly less well prepared than non-Black students.
Well, let me talk about that first challenge. I mean, isn't it your hope that when you publish a paper, it will somehow have an effect on public policy? You want it to enter the political discourse, don't you, Sandy?
Well, certainly I do, particularly being a public policy professor. But
right.
I'm very disturbed when studies do have a political impact when they are not actually sound.
So it's the quality of the report, not the fact that it might be used in political discourse.
That's right.
All right. So let's talk about the quality of the report then in your mind. Are you saying that you think students are as well that African-American or students of color are as well prepared as white students when they enter college? Isn't that part of the critique of our public education system is that it's not an equal system?
I don't think that there's a significant difference in preparation at a selective institution like Duke. Peter is absolutely correct that there are differences in test scores between Black and white students at Duke University on average. So in the cohort that they look at in their study, the 2001 and 2002 cohort, I think the mean math and verbal scores for white students was 14-16, and for Black students it was 12-75. Now, that's a 130-point gap at the mean. But the Black student scores are well above the national average for all students taking the SAT, which is about 1030, and substantially above the national average for Black students taking the SAT, which is about 860. So your Black student population, just based on test scores, is a very select segment of students. And then if we investigate the question of why their test scores appear to be lower, it becomes possible to argue even more strongly that there's probably not much difference in their prior academic preparation.
And you attribute some of that to something you call stereotype threat. What is that?
Stereotype threat is the existence of prior beliefs about the cognitive ability of black students. And it's prior beliefs that suggest that black students are, in fact, less able or less capable or less competent as students. And so whether or not the black students themselves actually believe this, the mere existence of this, if this attitude actually has an effect on their academic performance. And this has been documented in an extensive body of work conducted by social psychologists, particularly Claude Steele and Joshua Aronson. They found that black students at Stanford University, under the stereotype threat condition, had scores that were 13% lower than comparable black students in the no threat condition. So this isn't a trivial effect. A 13% reduction of a score that a student might have at 1200 on the SAT would reduce the score in the threat condition to approximately 1,040.
Does this have to do with a presumed anxiety on the part of the student or a preconceived notion of prejudice on the part of the professor who's doing the grading?
Okay, so in the context of the stereotype threat studies that they've performed, the focus is on the presumed anxiety on the part of the student. The student doesn't want to confirm the stereotype that's held about the group that they belong to. And this puts additional pressure on them. So much pressure, in fact, that it actually alters and reduces their performance on the test.
Nana, the Black Student Alliance at Duke helped to organize a protest in response to the conclusions of this report. What bothered you about the report?
Well, namely for me, as the president of the Black Student Alliance, I'm very much dedicated to the purpose of intellectually, socially, and culturally enriching the black community at Duke by promoting academic achievement and intellectual pursuit. And this study seemed to undermine that pursuit, which was inherently problematic for the black community and the Black Student Alliance. The three primary issues about the implications of the study were with regard to the impact on students and peers, my peers, which is what I'm namely concerned with. And this, you know, really proved to be true a few days ago when I was having a conversation with one of the black freshmen at Duke who was interested in sociology and interested in pursuing sociology to the fullest of his ability. But as a result of the study and the controversy surrounding the study, is now questioning the legitimacy of that major. And that's problematic when we think about promoting academic achievement and success among students, all students at Duke. How can we, by any means, exist to support these ideals if we compromise that through studies like this? And I'm also concerned with, as a result of the study, the way in which matters related to race are handled at Duke. And this has proved to be very concerning. And this study is actually just one symptom of the several issues that exist within the racial community at Duke. And lastly, and most concerning, the image of the institution. The image of the institution, especially as black students exist, how are our degrees, especially for those of us in the social sciences and humanities, going to be perceived by those, our peers, our employers, graduate schools and whatnot, when such statements, analyses and conclusions are made and presented as fact?
Well, let me ask you, Peter Sidiakono, about that very assumption and the implication that somehow the humanities, social sciences are easier. It's just easier to get by. What does that do to students who come away with those degrees?
Well, I guess one key point here is that there are large earnings differences across majors. This isn't something that's not known in the business world. I mean, it was interesting, soon after all this happened, the front page of the student newspaper reported differences in unemployment rates across majors. This is in no way suggesting, in my mind, that these majors do not have value or anything of the sort, but it does point towards how well they're going to do in the marketplace later on.
Sandy, we'll go ahead. Yeah.
Can I interject briefly? As I stated, with regard to the concerns as a result of this study, in terms of how matters related to race are handled at Duke, it is extremely problematic for me to hear that this study, in fact, has nothing to do with race, and this study does not, in fact, have serious implications for the racial group that it focuses on. By all means, this has everything to do with race, and again, goes back to this notion that seems to be proven that issues related to race at Duke, and again, as displayed in this study, are improperly handled. And that's extremely dangerous when one is unable to recognize the role and presence in race in matters that we handle and are faced with, and not only unable to recognize it, but to deal with it properly. The implications of that are very serious, as we can see as a result of this unpublished manuscript surfacing.
Peter, are you surprised at the reaction to your report?
I was certainly surprised for a few reasons. One, it is unpublished. But in looking back on it, you know, and two, because when I say it's not about race, it's really saying that people with similar backgrounds behave similarly, regardless of race. Looking back on it, I can see where things can go awry. First of all, is in how economics talks about problems. The language that we use and the assumptions that we make, certain things are understood. And so how I would have written the article for non-economists would have been very different. And then the second is that it was picked up by somebody who was interested in filing a brief in the Supreme Court case.
Did that surprise you? Because forgive me for interrupting, but it's an unpublished study, and already it's part of the case that's in front of the Supreme Court. Does that surprise you?
That did surprise me. It also surprised me, I have, this is my fifth study on this area at least, and I'm surprised that this is the one that's gotten so much attention.
Well, and I have to say, it does say an analysis of the time path of racial differences in GPA and major choice. I mean, it is the title.
That's right. That comes about because of affirmative action. The only reason that we see these differences emerging is because of how affirmative action operates. But I really want to say that this is the key issue here is how much affirmative action is optimal, and this is only one part of the whole question. I mean, I have other papers that could be interpreted as very pro affirmative action.
Sandy Darity.
Well, I just wanted to say that it's interesting because the notion that students from different groups perform the same way depending upon their background is actually only accurate if you create stereotype-safe environments. And then you actually get a very surprising result for many people, which is, in fact, evidence that black students, when they have the opportunity to be in a stereotype-safe environment, outperform white students with comparable test scores upon admission. There's a newly published paper in Educational Psychology by Christine Logel and Greg Walton that demonstrates that. And interestingly enough, Walton goes on to argue that because test scores underestimate black students' academic potential, affirmative action actually performs the task of including stronger students in selective institutions of higher education. So they propose we should describe affirmative action as affirmative meritocracy rather than having the perspective that Peter is advancing, that affirmative action is selecting in students who are less well prepared.
Well, explain that in a little more detail, how it becomes a selective meritocracy, Sandy.
In the sense that the test scores that black students present to universities, particularly selective universities like Duke, which are essentially institutions that are getting a pool of black students who are the cream of the crop in some sense, that their test scores are actually repressed or lower as a consequence of the operation of stereotype threat. So that they actually have latent competencies that are hidden by the information that the admissions office receives. And so so when they have an opportunity to perform in a stereotype-safe environment, because the phenomenon of stereotype threat carries over into their institutional experience, particularly in a school where there are many faculty members who start with the prior, that because of affirmative action, the black students are inferior. So so stereotype threat's going to be operative in the school environment. If you can make the school environment stereotype-safe, those students will actually demonstrate higher performance than white students with comparable test scores.
Well, Nana, you talked about some of the underlying issues, and I'm guessing that you sense that, that Duke is not, in your estimation, a stereotype-free environment. What are the ways in which you experience that, your experience as a student, that you detect stereotype is in play?
Well, for example, in my capacity as the president of the Black Student Alliance, I've had, I guess, the relative unfortunate opportunity to hear about feedback and narratives from students, namely black students who, for example, find their professors, let's say in the sciences or humanities, in fact, unapproachable in terms of getting help and whatnot, because they fear that by reaching out and asking for help, they are somehow setting themselves up to be perceived of as lesser than or more incompetent than their counterparts. So whether or not that is actually the most appropriate way by which to deal with any issues within academics, that is kind of the inferiority complex that is perpetuated by this stereotype threat and feeling like I do not want to posit myself in a way in which this professor is going to think, oh, here's another black student who needs more help than their counterparts. And in terms of the stereotype threat and its implications are much more deeply ingrained than even just in the classroom. And I've really noticed this as I've engaged in these discussions regarding the study, the implications, et cetera, and whatnot. These stereotypes have really shaped the way in which people have legitimized or been willing to see the legitimacy of our concerns. And again, this is very reflective of how matters of race are related, are handled at Duke. And the relative incompetency, whether it's among students or faculty or administrators, in being able to properly approach and make sense of these issues. And this lack of understanding, this lack of competency in this area is problematic and leads to issues, again, outside of the classroom in terms of even black leadership at Duke, how issues like this are responded to by administration and whatnot. So like I said, this is not something that just stops at the classroom in terms of professor approachability or being able to see someone of your skin color and someone who is like you achieve and serve as an example that this is in fact possible. And people really, really fail to recognize the impact of that. And that translates into how these issues are handled, the response of, for example, the administration to these issues, and the seriousness of the implications of a study like this.
Well, Peter, when you hear Nana's story and you and Sandy, you know, present you with some research on something called stereotype threat, which has been researched, I mean, are these factors that can be put back into a report? Should they be factored into a report or an analysis that aim with the aims that your report had?
Well, since Sandy, I have dialogued about the stereotype threat a little bit, and since that time, I've done some more research on this, and it's really interplays with how much affirmative action we want to be doing. As I said, affirmative action is different for Hispanics than it is for African Americans. The stereotype threat, to the extent that it's there, can explain 50 points on the SAT gap, which leaves a substantial difference there. And my other concern with the stereotype threat is it seems as though affirmative action feeds into that and creating an environment where we would be more hostile.
Well, wait a minute. Let me stop you there and get Sandy. Sadly, I've only got about 30 seconds left. But the idea that because their affirmative action exists, professors might think, oh, these are less well-qualified students. They got in on affirmative action and have lower expectations. Sandy?
Well, being an old head, And having lived in the era before affirmative action existed, I can warrant that the degree of belief in black intellectual inferiority was pretty high then. So the marginal effects of affirmative action on that, I think, are negligible.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today. Nana Asante is a senior psychology major at Duke, also president of Duke's Black Student Alliance. Visit duke.edu/web/BSA for more information on that organization. William Sandy Darity is chair of Duke's African and African American Studies Department, also a professor of public policy and economics at Duke. Peter Arcidiacono is a Duke professor of economics, lead author of the new report, yet unpublished, What Happens After Enrollment, an analysis of the time path of racial differences in GPA and major choice. Coming up on the program, a writer explores her own family history through fiction. Stay tuned.